You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web, and your number one source for after-show entertainment.
Very good, Gene Johnson.
From the AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California, presented by Maria Menounos and Bing.com, and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies, this is AfterBuzz TV's Downton Abbey After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's Downton Abbey After Show.
Welcome, everybody. Thank you for joining us. Bing is for doing, and we are here doing another AfterBuzz TV After Show for Downton Abbey Season 3, Episode 6, Part 2. I am John Comerford, and I am joined in the studio by Tamara Berg.
Hey, everybody.
And Alina Akram.
Hi, everyone.
And helming for us in the booth is Stephen Lemieux. Stephen, say hi to everybody for us, will you? Thank you.
How's it going, everybody?
Okay, quick note. Everybody's wondering why we broke this down into two parts, and, you know, PBS decided to show back-to-back episodes as one, and since we have over 60 shows here at AfterBuzz, we only had an hour to do it, and so we decided to break it up into two. So that's the end of the program note. So we're on to part two, and where we left off was at the christening, where we had the family the family photo with the Lord Grantham and the Dowager having to take a picture with a priest, a left-footed priest, shall we say. Yeah, and so let's get
much
right
to their chagrin,
exactly,
which we could see on their faces.
Yeah, they did not like that. But this episode had a whole other thing. I want to start off with Edith, because we've been going on and on about poor Edith,
the middle
Edith.
Child.
And here we are thinking she's on to a new venture. She's starting to be a journalist. She's meeting with the editor. She's written a great article, apparently.
Right. Yes. One that actually has some substance.
Yes, it wasn't just some...
We were expecting some fluff piece,
exactly,
from her.
We weren't sure. Mm-hmm. So we opined that it might be something frou-frou. But no, it was a merit, so to speak. It had some depth that had to do with the soldiers and the returning soldiers, I should say, and them having to beg in the street or become dance partners, which I thought was
what an interesting occupation, so to speak.
I didn't think there was a big need for dance partners.
You
but,
wouldn't think, especially for male dance partners.
Yes.
You know, I mean, I know that happens a lot. You know, they're
10 cents a dance.
Exactly,
so
10 cents a dance.
Sounds like a male escort to me.
A little bit.
Could be.
Uh-huh.
But what I thought, more than anything, when she was talking to the editor about the whole thing, that conversation to me was fascinating, because he was saying, you know, she was mistaken. She thought, you know, oh, he was upset because I wrote something that wasn't a fluff piece. And he said, no, it's quite the contrary. He was really interested in it. And what were the words he said? He thought it was great.
A mature female voice.
Yes.
That he changed quickly to balance. Because Edith didn't like the word mature.
Not only that, but I thought it was great because so women are what, imbalanced? What's he trying to suggest? And, you know, she was fine with balanced. So I'm not exactly, I don't know if it was that or just because it had a balanced viewpoint, but I'm not exactly sure. Because,
women are hysterical.
Yes,
just
that's
face
what I'm
it.
Thinking. Well, and also he said that a woman's perspective about a man's subject.
Yes.
So, right, which is very progressive for that time.
Absolutely.
Very progressive for that
and
time.
But I just thought, you know, but it didn't faze her at all.
Well, she was saying, you know, I know it's not very feminine.
Yeah. And, yeah, that was the line I thought was great. It's not very feminine.
Not very feminine.
Yeah. But I felt so strongly about it. So. And of course, all the advances. Well, I shouldn't say advances. That's a little strong of a word for what the editor, how he was.
Well, he's definitely flirting, and he even asks her out.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes,
you can almost call it an advance.
Yeah, but I love the way she said flirting. It didn't sound flirting.
Flirting with me.
But anyway, so what do we think of him? Before we talk about what his situation is, did you at all think that there was a possibility there for Edith?
Well, yeah, we talked about that a little bit last week, and one of the things I really appreciate last week, it's a couple days ago. One of the things I appreciated about him this episode was that, yes, he was saying that she was pretty, but he was sort of complimenting her on her merits and her abilities, as opposed to just being the, you know, fluffy lady from Downton.
Yeah.
You know? And so, and I think she's going to appreciate that as well. And again, it follows with the theme of modernization and women having a role in society beyond just being hostesses. So I appreciated him recognizing that in her.
Well, go ahead.
I agree. I feel like I get a good energy out of him and he's into her for the right reasons.
Yeah.
So it's not just about being smitten or impressed by her.
Mm-hmm.
ladyship.
Yeah, her ladyship. No, it's absolutely
true. It does sound funny. It's cute.
But, you know, it was also interesting that she, for me, Edith made a little leap herself, because before she was still just having a hard time even grasping the idea of being having a job, first of all, but then being a journalist, which is really not in keeping with what her father would want or what her station would be. But then to write a piece that wasn't even what a woman would normally write. So I thought those are big leaps for her.
They are. And, you know, she really kind of fought to get this job in her own sort of subtle way.
Absolutely. She had to fight Dad and the whole thing.
Yeah. But again, it's refreshing to see that she is not falling into the easy way.
Right.
Because they're calling this a diary column. I guess that's what the term is. Mm-hmm. And so it would be sort of day-to-day life. Mm-hmm. And the fact that she wrote, you know, this
had again. Some teeth.
This, yeah, exactly. Was really refreshing and a bit of a, you know, exciting thing for Edith to be doing, I think.
Yeah,
because
because it had some depth. Where before she's kind of, you know, she's been jilted, so she's kind of an afterthought.
Right.
So you're here to write a piece of substance that people might take seriously, and that a ladyship is taking into account the soldiers who've fought for king and country and all that kind of stuff. But of course, it's often
right. Nothing comes easy for Edith.
Well, she even says that. Remember the whole thing?
She?
Well, yes, because Mary asks her, "Hey, listen, when you're in town, could you make sure that Matthew doesn't take the earlier train home?" And she says, "Well, what reason would I give?" And she says, "I don't know. Make one up." Why must everything be so complicated?
And I go,
what is so complicated about that? But then I think about Edith, and everything in her life is complicated.
It's all work.
Yeah.
That's how it is for us poor middle children. Yeah, I just want to say, once again.
For those of you who don't know.
Edith and I have a kinship. I can relate.
I'm not sure you want to make that kinship stronger.
I'm just saying I can relate to her needing to stand out and make her way. It's
true.
And seriously, it is the middle child, you know, and the people who believe
so
in the birth order thing, the middle child, you know, has to stand out and that sort of thing. And I think I love how they portray it with Edith. I think she does, because she's got beautiful Mary and angelic Sybil, and then there's poor Edith.
And poor Edith again, because obviously the editor's married, and even that.
Yes.
is not easy. Even
no,
that's not
it's
simple.
It's complicated.
Right, which is great. Go ahead.
I couldn't believe you could make a call back in the day and find out all that information about somebody.
Thank you. I thought the same thing.
What the heck? What?
She just gets on the phone and says, I want to know about his past, I want to know about his personal life, as a matter of fact, too.
Did she call Google's grandmother?
Yes,
I mean, what,
exactly.
Who was that? Well, how did she get that?
Well, and I was thinking it might partly be because
she works for a paper?
Well, no, because she's her ladyship.
Because she's a lady, okay.
You know, because they have power, they have people who...
Sure, but it seems so odd that she would, you know, that her ladyship would be asking private information of somebody.
Do you mean that Edith would?
Yes.
Because she'd been jilted. I think she's once bitten, twice shy.
No, I beg your pardon. Not that she would have a motivation to, absolutely. But as a lady, it's improper to ask about somebody's private information over the phone. I would think that would be improper. Not that she wouldn't want to know or couldn't find out, but to do it over the phone and some person it looked like she didn't even know.
Well, and again, I think it's all about her growth and her becoming, you know, once bitten, twice shy. She's not going into that again. And lo and behold, her reasoning is validated because she finds out he's married.
But it's not even a simple thing.
No, what a awkward conversation that was. I mean, from her getting jilted to him talking about how, I'm married, but it's complicated.
She's insane.
And I
she's
can relate.
She's actually a lunatic. A lunatic was the word that they used.
Yeah.
Yes.
For her.
And I'm going, of course. It's not even easy here, but it would have been great if he was just married and she could just write him off and move on. But no, it's a whole other thing for her because it's Edith. Why does everything have to be so
complicated? Of course. But she says, you are, in fact, married. And I find that concept wholly repugnant.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Poor Edith likes a
poor Edith.
Okay, now that leads us to Rose, because I thought what was great was that Rose, the whole thing, we'll get into the more of it, but the part that especially relates to the Edith thing is that Rosemond, Aunt Rosemond, I should say, takes just calls Rose on the carpet and says, a woman of respect, well-born such as you, dating a married man, how could you, all that kind of stuff. And all that happens in front of Edith, and she's right there for that conversation. This, of course, is before she knows that Edith is married.
But right.
You got to know then, even after she learns he's married, she's still considering this. You know that's where we're going to take her, right?
Right.
That's where we're going to be going, right?
Well, you think?
Oh, yeah, I think so.
I do.
His circumstance is a little different, though.
Yes.
And
It is, but not by name, not by title, not by reputation. I mean, he's just a married man. They don't care.
But in Edith's defense, she went and called him out on it.
Yes.
Because initially, when she thought it was just a typical marriage, you know, she wasn't having it.
But isn't it also because I'm opining that yes, they're going to get together. There'll be romance. Whether or not it'll be physical or anything, I don't know. But she will be taken by him or smitten with him, I should say, only because.
Have you been reading romance novels?
Well, it's true. But, you know, he obviously finds her attractive, but it's also the merit thing. He really does find her. He's
interesting.
He fancies her, the whole thing. Yeah, absolutely. So, and that's got to be so enchanting and persuasive and seductive to her because, you know, being the middle child and not having any of that attention. And now, even if it is from a married man, it's so easy to rationalize. But because, yes, he's a married man, but his wife is crazy, so.
Well, and the other thing about it is that this whole world that she's being exposed to is expanding her life view. She's getting out of Downton. She's being validated for things that she values.
Right.
As opposed to, you know, looking pretty and being a good hostess and you know, being a wife and all that kind of stuff. That's not to say that she doesn't want those things, but she's being validated in a way that is really keeping her, it's separating her from where she came.
Sure.
And I have a little bit of news that I'll talk to you about in the news
that will relate to some of this stuff. Ooh,
yeah.
Spoiler alert. Yeah, thank you very much, Tara.
Yeah, we've got some news.
Nice tease,
talk about.
Tamara.
Yeah. All right. It's very interesting.
Okay, well, you know, that for me wraps up. Well, let's go further into the Rose thing real quick.
Yeah, let's talk about Rose.
As soon as I saw her in those sassy outfits, I knew she was trouble.
Sassy?
Yes.
So you thought they were sassy. Okay, what?
Yes, did you guys see those ruffled pants?
Oh, sure.
She looked like that little trouble. Hoochie mama in the house.
Wow.
Okay, a hoochie mama.
I was writing that she was dancing like a trollop.
Wow.
When she first came on the scene, she looked like the proverbial breath of fresh air she got out of the car, you know.
Yeah.
A little, what was the movie I said? A Room with a View.
Yeah.
You know, this angel face and, you know, the beautiful hat and always in blue.
Let's just talk about that. Just the way
she
they choreographed
adorable.
It. Oh, she did. But the way they choreographed it, that
her
whole
arrival.
Shot. Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. That, I mean, that was your classic arrival in a movie.
Of the ingenue.
Like exactly.
Right.
This is how we present her. So you, just from that way they present you, I get who she is.
Yes.
You don't really have to go any farther. No talking is needed.
Yes.
The whole wonderfully staged, directed, acted, the whole thing was great. So,
I agree. And just beautiful to look at.
Yeah.
She's beautiful to look at.
She's beautiful.
But you know, and again, with the costuming, interesting that she came in with these really kind of wild outfits. Uh-huh. And she was always in this, you know, light blue, which I'm sure, you know, Kevin would have something to say about, you know, about why they chose blue, because it's the innocence, maybe, and then the
really curly hair, which I haven't seen on the other
ever.
Well, I think everything. I think for me, the colors, because everything at Downton usually is darker,
conservative.
It's you know, and it's, if I can use the term, flatter. You know, so that, which goes to the ruffles. I mean, she's totally obviously from a different era, so to speak, different generation, I should say. So you know, coming in that
there's going to be something.
There's
happening
turmoil,
here. Right?
Isabel warned the dowager. She said, "I wouldn't even know how to talk to an 18-year-old."
Yeah,
right.
But what did the dowager say? Just keep smiling.
Just keep smiling.
And
agree.
Like it's like you don't disagree with anything. Yeah.
But so interesting that the story that came in with Rose was she hates London.
Yeah.
She just hated it. And that's why she's coming here, because she hated London.
And then you know a lot about the mom already. You know that the mom and she obviously don't get along. And some, you know, so she's like,
what does dear mother have to say about this now?
And the fact that Rose lies no problem in front of everybody at dinner.
Right.
Yes. No, I'm going to surprise. It's a surprise for, you know.
Well, it sounded so implausible to begin with, right?
Right, exactly.
Oh, Edith was on her, too.
Yeah, she knew.
She knew. It's she was once a young 18-year-old.
I'll go with you.
Yeah. And she knew she needed help. That's why when Matthew said, oh, no, please stay with me. I'm going to need help.
I suspect she will be a handful.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So I would imagine not only because of who Rose is, but because Edith is not too far removed from when they were probably a handful, should we say.
Yes.
A hellion.
Probably not quite the handful Rose is.
No.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Mary and Sybil were quite the handfuls, if you think
about
it.
Yes, they were.
Yeah. So. Mm-hmm.
Well, speaking of help, guys, I got to say, if you need help thinking of something to get your loved one on Valentine's Day.
Ooh, it's coming up.
What do we got?
You should probably shoot yourself on over to our official AfterBuzz merchandise store by going to AfterBuzzTV.com. Typing that in your little browser window, and then find a little banner that says "Shop Now," and get your AfterBuzz TV merchandise.
All right,
there.
Well, thank you very much.
We have lots of stuff in men's apparel, women apparel, kids apparel, drinkware, home and office, and we have little baby onesies. So definitely head on over there.
Which would be great for little baby Sybil.
Exactly.
All right.
Well, there you go.
If only we could get little baby Sybil to wear an after.
If only we could.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen.
No.
Well, speaking of baby Sybil, that talks about the future and the fact that they need the estate to stay in solvency in order for there to be an estate for children and grandchildren. So the only thing that it was found really interesting, they furthered the storyline about what to do with the estate, and you know, because Matthew just so doesn't know how to talk to Lord Grantham. And you know, it's like, why is he just yelling at him? Obviously that tactic hasn't worked, and I'm asking Julian Fellows, why do you keep that same argument going? I don't think Matthew's an idiot. Change the story.
Yeah.
Try a different tack, you know?
Well, and you know, the other part of it with Lord Grantham being, you know, so portrayed as being downtrodden and disrespected, and
but even this time he felt sorry for himself, and so that goes to what Lena was talking about last podcast, is that, you know, he was driving her crazy.
Like, I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm not feeling sorry for him. He needs to change. He needs to get with the times. His wife is telling him. His daughters are encouraging him.
Cora was great.
I mean, did you even notice when Matthew was trying to argue the case, how he mentioned?
Yeah.
Who did Charlie Ponzi?
Yeah.
A champ in America, Charlie Ponzi. We can invest with him.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, Lord Grantham, haven't you learned?
Well, I mean, let's face it. Back then, a lot of people invested with Ponzi.
Yes, they did. They did, but...
And some made money. Most didn't. Some didn't.
Yeah, very few did.
That was nice.
Bernie Madoff of the time.
Exactly.
I know.
Wow. But that was great, though. I mean, you know, again, just steeping us in the time. But to pull that name out, it was like, oh, nice.
Yeah.
Way to go.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's so ubiquitous now. But back then, they had no idea what the heck that guy was doing, obviously. So, but, you know, and I thought the argument, well, the continuing argument was driving me crazy. But then when Tom started coming up
in
the story, and making his.
Case.
Yeah, making his case, and especially with that one moment at the breakfast table.
Yes.
I thought, what a great argument, and the way he said it, the way he was saying it and everything, and Lord Grantham, I was thinking, wow, that was eloquent, and then Lord Grantham actually says that. I thought it was great.
Right. But you also talked about, when we were on our way over here, you talked about how, you know, the sort of basis of Tom's argument.
Yeah, it's very Marxist in a sense. We all have gifts to give the collective and the family in this case. And, you know, he's making this argument.
So he's maybe getting his way in having a little bit of his own principles inserted in.
But, you know, but it also was cognizant of everybody's, you know, and I thought it was a great three-pronged thing. That, look, I know as much as I can about the land, more than you guys do. Obviously, Matthew knows the law, and you know the responsibility that we have to the people that live here. So, you know, and it's like, obviously, and that argument has been there forever. And even that, you know, last week the Dowager was the one that finally said, hey, Tom should take over for Jarvis. Like, and we've been going, not only that, but why is it that's been on the table, it's been in the forefront like crazy, how come you haven't noticed it?
Well, I think it just has everything to do with he's coming from his history, you know, and coming from what he knows. And Cora actually sort of challenged that. She said, you know, when we talked about the third Earl running the thing into the ground, the fourth Earl practically running it into the ground, saving it by dying. and, you know, Cora says, you know, so what? You've run through my money and then you're just going to run through Matthew's money.
Yeah.
And basically we're just putting it off.
Yeah.
And so, you know, for the sake of tradition, it's going to be the death of the estate. We've got to move ahead.
But the irony of Tom being the one that actually turns Lord Grantham, which I thought was, it helps their relationship a lot.
Indeed.
So.
And it's funny to see him being the calm, collected one, being rational about it, and Matthew, the one arguing and always in a fight with Lord Grantham, at least in this episode.
Yes. So. But then, you know, just a little bit to add to it, Tom saying at the end, talking to Cora about what if we stay.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that? Do you mind?
Yeah, exactly.
So he's clearly got his vision on
because
he
was all set to go. Yeah. And so was it the cricket? Was it the fact that he made a connection with the Lord Grantham? Or is it the fact that he see that he's now an integral part? He's one of the three that could turn this around. What do you think?
I think it's a combination. I think also seeing baby Sybil with Mary and Matthew and how that comfort is there, you know, knowing she's with some people that love her and vice versa.
Yeah.
So I think all of that has...
I do. And I also think, obviously, the more time he spends, the more he can no longer hang on to the stereotype he had of these people because now they're people.
Right.
They're not just the stereotype, the prejudice he has. It's these are real... And he sees their faults as well as their good. And so he can sit there and see them as human beings and go, well, this isn't a bad environment for my child to grow up in.
Yeah. As opposed to acting from the stereotypes and archetypes that he's been
Which is always the case, And we say
put a human face on
there
somebody.
There you go, walking a mile in someone's shoes, all that kind of stuff. So he's actually doing that. And you know, how about that last shot at the cricket game? First of all, I thought it was great that they were just trying to twist his arm like crazy to play cricket, and he's never played cricket.
It's not that I'm resisting. I can't play, for God's sake.
And again, another moment with the brothers. And that reminded me. It was a very kind of brotherly, as well as father son kind of thing about learning to cricket. Whatever that is.
And then, endearing. In
the final shot, when Tom actually catches the cricket ball, whatever you call it, and then the three of them all in white, you could see the three, generations, so to speak, and.
Yeah, the coming together.
The coming together, and then you say, okay, it looks like there's a hope and future.
There is a future, perhaps, for Downton Abbey.
Which, so we know that's going to just get killed.
It's just getting right. They're going to rip our hearts out.
I have not seen the finale.
I'm just saying.
That's how it works in TV. Mm-hmm. They give you something to love, and then they take it away from you.
Not so soon, please. No, I can't handle it.
Okay.
Ay.
All right, well, speaking of something in love, that takes us to Ethel, because obviously her big concern is Charlie, her son.
Yes.
And so we've been with the storyline with Isabel and the Dowager. Boy, the Dowager went into overdrive trying to move this thing out.
She did with her machinations, didn't she?
Wow, yeah. Putting the advertisements out and all that other stuff. And then having, Ethel, kind of following through. So you see that Ethel's kind of open to this, even though Isabel... She's obviously still not sure about it. But even though as Isabel is not sure about the whole thing, she's still moving it along. So I guess in some fashion, she either doesn't want to go up against a dowager or she thinks that, deep down, it's probably best for the Crowley family and Ethel to be able to get a free ship.
I think we sort of saw it with Mrs. Hughes's argument earlier.
Right.
I hope you don't think I'm being ridiculous, but I do kind of understand where she's coming from. That she could have a better life elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Even though the Dowager didn't go about getting it done the right way, it's still the reasonable thing for Ethel at this point.
Yeah.
Or at that point in time.
Yeah. Well, right, considering all of the scenarios and all of the elements.
And I don't think she's in denial about it either, so.
Who, Ethel?
Yeah.
No, yeah, clearly is not. She knows that she's not going to get a fair shake.
Yeah, she deals with it every day, so. Yeah.
Being turned away at the store.
I just want to talk a little bit about that moment where Ethel says, I guess it looks like I'll be staying when she gets the... And Isabel is sort of like, that's not how it played.
That's not what we were thinking. Exactly. First of all, that she had the audacity to say that.
I know. I thought that was a little... a little forward.
Yeah.
But clearly she feels kind of protected by... Mrs. Crowley and what she's done for her.
And ultimately, it is the best answer for everybody, I would guess. You know, but I was surprised to see that the grandmother of Charlie show up and
right.
willing yes, to deal Bryant. Deal with the grandfather, and I will take care of him.
Yeah, thank don't goodness, because somebody yeah. needs to take care of that man.
You don't like him at all. You want
he's
to
he's a pain in the ass.
He truly is.
He's a jackass, is what
arse,
he is.
Arse, damn it. Arse. Back down. Okay.
So. He's a jack arse. I don't okay. think they say that in England. No.
So, all right. So,
but she's always been nice, though, Mrs. Bryant. Yeah. And it's mm-hmm. it's good to see her come and stand up for Ethel.
Of the two of them, she obviously has his Charlie's best interest at heart. She yes. wants the mother to be part of his part of his life somehow.
And it must have just something to do with. Well, and the fact is that you know she lost her. She's a mother who lost a son.
Right.
So that instantly connects the two women. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. mothers and their sons. And right. and if Charlie's you know leaving his mom, then there's a whole yeah. element to it that Mrs. Bryant can relate to.
Mm-hmm. But those exchanges about the whole thing between Isabel and the Dowager. I mean, I don't have the words verbatim and everything, but the two of them just going on and on at each other. And each one thinks they got the other, and then usually the Dowager has the last
word, right? And then, you know, there's this look on yeah. on Isabel's face. You know, bristling the slow anchor. Burn.
Yeah. And the Dowager, not only does she take care of business for Ethel, but overhears the whole Rose thing.
Right. She calls out. She totally tattles on Rose.
Exactly. But the way she does it, they don't even know until the cricket match when Rosemont says, "Wait, did you play a trick on me?"
That was an excellent little scene, man. Did Rose get hers?
It yeah. was.
And she's like, "Well, you won't be running away this time. I'll be accompanying you."
Yeah. And again, we didn't even talk about this, but let's go back to it because we're just on Rose again. We have to talk about the fact that Rose, as soon as she's into London, she's on the phone scheming, planning,
right.
yes. thing, and ends up with the married man at the what was the
Blue Dragon?
The Blue Dragon. What kind of place is the Blue Dragon? Well, you know, one of those places. And Rosemont says,
"Well, the point is, darling, I don't know."
And then they cut right to it, and there's a black man playing jazz and they're
and
dancing,
dirty
and,
dancing.
Oh my God! Yes. What the, I mean, oh my God! For downtown,
horror.
Shocking.
It was quite
shocking.
Quite the same.
What? How great to be out of. Down in this place. I mean, that's it. That looked like a good club, man.
I loved watching that yeah. whole scene because it was so lively. We yeah. saw, I'm a big fan of the costumes and jewelry.
Sure.
But also watching the power play, I thought was just brilliantly executed mm-hmm. in this. Mm-hmm. So she's there, Rose is there, sees her family, about faints when yeah. she sees them. Uh-huh. And then, you know, the barbs start going, but yeah. they're extremely polite with their barbs.
Yes.
And Rosemont, right away, so where's Mrs. So-and-so?
And he just
answers.
Totally trips him.
Already.
Yeah.
She's so good.
Clever. Yeah, exactly. And Matthew whisks her off to the dance floor. I think we need to dance. I just thought the whole, you know, dance in the conversation and confrontation mm-hmm. was just brilliant. Mm-hmm. And then he just lays it down and says, this is how it's going to be. No two bones. No bones about it. There are no two ways about it. You're mm-hmm. doing it this way. And
it works because the thing she's worried about most is that it's going to get back to mom.
Yeah.
So what is mom like? What is that going to be like?
Oh, I don't even want to know.
So wonder if we're going to find that.
I hear tell we are going to find out.
Nice. Ooh. Okay, good. Mm.
Well. I want to see more of Rose, too.
We will.
So we like the breath of fresh air.
I liked it. It was fun.
Yeah. Nice. Okay, well, I'm sure we will. So.
Yes, indeed.
I'm sure she caused quite a stir. Okay, so we were talking about Ethel, and the reason why I wanted to talk Ethel right before we talk Thomas is, why don't we do the correlation first? So we have Ethel, who's had a tainted past, so to speak.
Right.
And they find out that Thomas has a
history, I guess you could
call
it.
A history, but what's the word? They call it, he's revolting to Carson.
Right. And then he's been twisted by nature into something foul.
Something foul, that's right.
Something foul. Of course, Thomas says, you know, eventually says, "I'm not foul, I'm just different than you." But, so we have these two people who've got this...
You meaning Ethel and Thomas.
Ethel and Thomas, mm-hmm. who've got so much against them in terms of what society sees
yes.
of them. And this is how, you know, they both need a reference. They both need a new start, fresh start. I mean, they even say, Isabel says to Ethel, "You can be washed clean." Right. So they're so tainted by this. I mean, and it is. I mean, it is shocking for the time. But I just, the parallel of the two, Thomas not getting his, or ostensibly. Or,
at one point.
At one point,
story,
he's
yeah.
not going to be getting his reference. Right. So therefore, he can't move on after 10 years. And then you realize how important it is just for that reference. It's not like, you know, these where you just get another job.
Yeah.
It's the reference is everything.
It's it is everything to
and
these that people.
You, and in order for you to start over, you've got to go, you have, I mean, it's one of you have to go abroad.
Right. You have to leave the country. That's how important
exactly.
the references are.
You can't reinvent yourself. We're in America. It's money. I mean, you can reinvent yourself anywhere you want, anytime,
yeah.
almost. I mean, you know, it's going to be harder these days with all the information we
right.
have. But I thought that was fascinating.
But people cared so much about the reference at that
yeah.
time. And especially when you're talking about, you know, servants who mm-hmm. are going to be in your home, mm-hmm. and your home is such a sensitive place. I mean, obviously,
yeah.
it's all about appearances and reputations, and that's what we keep talking about over
yeah.
and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you've got these people back doors or downstairs,
yeah.
they need to be trustworthy.
Above reproach.
Yeah, and that's a lot of the reason why, especially yeah. in these grand houses, the references are so important. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't have them, then you're not to be trusted,
and
I'm not letting you take care of my baby and serve me my food and clean my, you know,
and it's
bedroom.
A stain on your house,
yes,
or a you know mark against your family
yes.
or whatever, as opposed to somebody who's trying to do something good for you know, like Isabel, I'm just trying to help somebody out.
Yeah,
so
let's get into the Thomas Carson
this
affair.
Is the Thomas Carson,
as I call it. In this episode.
Okay, yes.
It's, you know, it's just, there was a lot going on.
Oh, my
on
God.
Here.
Everybody got involved. Mrs.
Yes.
Hughes, Bates. I mean, everybody
O'Brien,
got involved.
Obviously.
Yeah, exactly.
One of the great lines with Carson and Jimmy, well, I've never been called a liberal in my life, and I don't intend to start now. I do not believe in scandal.
I just want to go back to it because I know we touched on it, but that whole sequence, well, the scene, I should say, between Carson and Thomas in the beginning when the whole thing about your
yes.
I don't want to get into your revolting life.
Right.
You've been twisted into something foul. All
right.
That kind of stuff. It's like, my God. Just
hard
I can't,
to watch.
It was. Regardless of how you feel about Thomas, just another human being talking like that about another human being. I was like, whoa.
It's hard to watch, but it's the reality
of
the time.
It was
of
terrible.
The time.
So,
yeah.
So that was just there. And then, you know, we've talked about how they've made Thomas into a much more sympathetic character and you really feel for him. And even that, because he was going to have no reference and all, I was just going, this guy's, that's it. Which I completely understood the whole Bates thing, why it started to get to him.
Right.
And why he decided, you know, to help and all that.
Because he had been scorned.
Yeah, and wrongly accused and all
yeah.
that. Not wrongly accused so much, but that his life would be taken away from him,
right.
so to speak. That's what he said.
Right.
So, yeah, I totally understood that. I didn't have any problem with that. I just thought it was hysterical that it backfired on him.
I just can't believe Mrs. O'Brien wanted to take it that far all over Alfred.
Yeah.
Or Thomas not helping Alfred.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I thought maybe getting him fired was one thing, but...
Yeah.
She wanted to ruin him.
Yeah.
Exactly. She's ruthless.
Yeah, well, and she even said that. I mean, she's just following on her word. She's just, you know, following up, you know, fulfilling her word. She says.
And then we have Thomas, who is so defeated.
Yeah,
when Bates is trying to encourage him, he doesn't even want to have a fight.
Yeah,
which is so strange. Yeah, exactly. You know, I didn't think he would do that because, you know, he's been able to figure out how to maneuver his way through everything.
Yeah. I mean, he's fought, I'm sure, his whole life, considering his situation, uh-huh. but he seems done.
And what a nice way to have Bates come back to remind us who he is, you know, standing up for the one who's being bullied.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Okay, you're beaten, fine, then give me the weapon.
The weapon.
And I'll do the rest.
Mm-hmm.
So, and, you know, I think it was that moment outside the house, outside of Bates' cottage, and when he saw Thomas.
In the shadows
in the
emerging
shadows,
with
that,
the, in the
that,
smoke.
And, of course, when he was beaten and all this stuff, that made him see Thomas in a different way, kind of like how Tom sees the family in a different way. It's so easy once we've pegged people and put them in the box. You're going to fit in this peg whether you really do or not. But once we've taken them out of that peg, you can actually see them as a people. Because it was great is everybody knew Thomas was gay. So
right,
that
yeah.
part, was a non-issue.
Wasn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Oh, and you
I
have
know.
To talk about Lord Grantham's
oh,
line.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Brilliant,
yes.
brilliant line.
Well, I want to get it right, so go you talk
yeah.
about it.
Well, just, you know, the idea that, again, it's the parallel with Ethel and Thomas.
Yeah.
You know, everybody knew she had been a lady of the evening.
Yeah.
And everybody knew knew Thomas was gay.
Yeah.
But, apparently, you know. So in his case, they all kind of let it be a pass. But with Ethel, so many people couldn't let it be a pass.
Yeah.
And I thought that was an interesting parallel.
Yeah, but they let it be a pass until it became a problem, until it was going to become a problem for the family.
Right.
It was in some way bring shame on them.
Right.
And then it was like, uh-oh,
right,
we can't do that. Just like, you know, I guess you can have Ethel working for you, but we can't be here because it'll bring shame upon us.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Yeah.
But anyway, Lord Grantham's line, if I shouted blue murder every time someone tried to kiss me at Eton, I'd have gone hoarse in a month.
I had to stop the recording because I was laughing so hard at that one.
Never heard him say something like that. Yeah, but it was great.
Genius.
But I thought it was nobody seemed to care, which was interesting. They all knew.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that wasn't the issue. The issue was he was being treated wrongly.
Mm-hmm,
like, yeah,
mm-hmm,
sure he's that, but that doesn't mean the guy should have his life ruined.
Right.
Even though they may not have agreed with it or, you know, accepted it or whatever, but his life shouldn't be taken away from him.
Right.
Yes. Even when Mrs. Hughes is making the argument for him, Mr. Carson says, I'm only sorry you have to listen to such horrors.
Right.
But she totally blows that off and says, well, forget about that. You're letting Jimmy blackmail you.
Yeah,
exactly.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. But of course, he's doing it all to shield the family.
Yes. So, and this concerns the scandal.
The other thing I liked about Mrs. Hughes is when she sees Thomas outside and he's, you know, pitiful.
Oh.
And he says, look, I just don't want to say anything that might
disgust and shock or
shock,
something like that.
Shock or disgust you. And she says, my.
Now
I think I have to hear it now.
She's just so lovable.
She's great. I love her, man. I don't know. I think she's my fave. And Tammy, you were talking about Anna being so smiling.
Oh, she just was just lit like a candle from the inside on this one. Every single scene, she was just smiling. Mm-hmm. She was joking.
Got her guy back.
She's just so happy. Happy.
Two things about the Bates part. One, when he first sees Thomas outside.
Yeah.
And I swear to God, it was shot the same way. It almost looked the same way as he was dealing with Craig. It was like he was back in prison.
Uh-huh.
Okay, what's this guy here for? All right, here I'm going to have to go into my prison mode and deal with this guy. And then it turns because Thomas isn't really there to threaten him or anything like that. So that changes, obviously. And then when he sees he's beaten, he goes, okay, he's the guy I have to help fight for. But then when he has O'Brien in the house.
Mm. Yes.
That was classic. That's death. Prison Bates, man.
It was.
He.
And just all it took was a whisper.
All it took was a whisper.
And boy, did she change.
Yeah. How about the desperation on Ms. O'Brien's face?
That was what I wanted to talk about.
She's dealing with Jimmy.
She's talking to Jimmy, and she's saying, you know, you really need to. And she looked panicked.
Yeah.
So. That was, wow.
So, well, we know that Achilles heel. So. Mm. Of course, Bates doesn't even know what it has to do with anything, but. He knows it worked.
Which is part of the brilliance of it. He doesn't even know what that phrase means.
But how smart of Thomas to be able to know that that was the one thing and to say it and know not to say any more.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
I mean, that was really smooth.
And it's one of those great things about this time where people didn't, you know, you didn't talk about personal things. You didn't pry into other people's business, even if they're family and you're sitting there at dinner.
Yeah.
So you could say something like, her ladyship's soap.
Mm-hmm.
And that would stop it all down and make everything change.
So let me ask you this, because it seems to me that my estimation is that Thomas didn't say any more because he wants this to end, but he doesn't want to make her any more of an enemy. Because if you put O'Brien in the position where she has nothing to lose,
right,
I think that would be horrible because then there's no stopping her.
Right.
If she's willing to do this here and it all came out, then she'd probably just off him.
Well, wouldn't Thomas get in trouble as well for keeping such a terrible secret?
Possibly.
You know,
possibly, but
that's Lord Grantham's child.
Yeah, but here's the thing. He doesn't ever have to say when he found that out.
Sure.
So who's going to say different? O'Brien? Well, he's known for years.
Good point.
He's going to say, well, no, she told me a week ago.
Good point.
You're right.
And that's
why
we're on the... So that could have been easily handled.
Well, so now, as it turns out, Thomas ends up staying.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
In the end...
And
then
so,
under butler.
How do you think that is going to affect the relationships with everybody downstairs, but specifically with Thomas and O'Brien?
Yeah.
That's going to be something to watch.
Right. Or do you think there's going to be like this unsteady detente or something like that just because, look, we clashed, we went our separate ways, we're in our corners, just leave it at that. Because I still have this over you.
Maybe so.
Because I can pull this anytime I need to.
Yeah, and I can tell other people.
Right.
The important people when I want to.
So, or do you think that's going to happen, or do you think they're going to continue to
cross? I'm concerned about the relationship between Bates and Thomas, because now Thomas has a job that has a higher rank than Bates.
He's an under-butler, but he's over Bates.
Right.
Yes. And then on top of it, I want to see what's going to happen between Alfred and Thomas.
Yeah.
Because does he ever find out that Alfred went to the police?
Yeah, I don't know.
Or contacted the police?
Yeah. There's still a lot of rich fodder within the story. It is definitely not resolved, and I love that about this.
No, yeah, it's not resolved at all.
Mm-mm.
But everybody knows, now that everybody, we already know that everybody knows about Thomas, but now that everybody knows about Thomas, but now that everybody knows that everybody knows,
right?
Will that change things?
Right.
We will see.
That'll be interesting too.
I don't know.
All right. So, here's our program note. We want to thank everybody for rating and commenting, especially those people who've been tweeting, going, "What happened to part two? Why didn't you guys finish the episode?"
Yes.
So, if we didn't get that information out to you in time, we apologize for that. But we're glad you came back and said that you wanted to hear the second part, and I hope you've enjoyed it.
Yes.
So,
thank you
for that. For everybody
who's rating
and commenting and downloading, please tell a friend so they can be part of the conversation as well, and keep your rating, keep your commenting too, so that we can. And be abreast of what you guys are thinking of, what your thoughts on what things we either miss, or things that that you'd like us to talk about, or other ideas that you may have about what's going on in the world of Downton.
Let us know.
So thank you for that. That, I think, will take us to news and gossip.
AfterBuzz TV News.
All
Tamara,
right.
What do you got?
I have a little bit of news. This is kind of interesting. The first thing that I wanted to say was Lady Rose, as I sort of teased in the show, that she is going to come back. I don't know if she's in for season 4. I believe she is. I haven't been able to get a definitive word on that, but she will be in the finale next week.
Ooh. Yay.
And she will return to wreak havoc in the future.
Whoa, there you go. You get your wish.
She's going to wreak havoc.
Alina gets what she wants.
Sassy little.
Sassy. The sassy trollop, I think we've decided.
Sassy trollop.
I like it.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. I have a little information about the cast talking about Lady Sybil's death.
Oh,
okay. This is interesting because it was for the first time just a couple of weeks ago, they finally talked publicly about that.
Because they've been a moratorium on talking about it so they wouldn't ruin it for the audience.
Right, exactly. And who was it? Michelle Dockery, who plays Lady Mary, said that after the scene where
Sybil died,
Lady Sybil is played by Jessica Brown Finley, she said, "When we had farewell drinks for Jess, we had to make sure we weren't giving the storyline away to anyone in the pub who was there where they were celebrating." She said, "We had to pretend it was her birthday, but we had just filmed these horrific scenes, and so we had tear-stained drinks."
Wow.
And also,
that's probably some good acting right there. No, it's her birthday.
No,
really,
it's her birthday.
Happy birthday.
Oh,
yeah.
Julian Fellowes also said, "You grow to love the characters, and they have a life of their own, so it's very hard to kill one of them. Hard for me and hard for the cast, and the fact that they were all so good in the scene only made it worse."
Yeah, still, it was a great scene. Ugh.
I still get sad thinking about
it. I know.
You know, it's weird.
Breaking.
Don't you miss her a little bit?
Yes. She was my favorite sister.
But it's amazing how much better Tom is now that she's not around.
So true.
It is.
Go ahead.
It is. We also noted that there is a new Facebook page campaigning for Dame Judi Dench to make an appearance in a guest role on Downton Abbey.
Oh, my God.
Right now, as of a few minutes ago, the page had 1,047 likes. I added my own, so it's 1,048.
Okay. And where is this page that people...
It's on Facebook.
It's on Facebook.
Yeah,
okay.
And so it's... if you just search for Facebook, Judi Dench, and Downton Abbey...
It'll probably come up.
It will come up. She was BAFTA nominated for Skyfall.
Nice.
And she, I believe she was saying that she would be very happy to do
so
this.
She would go up and somehow be either go up against the Dowager or be friends with the Dowager.
And that's what people are hoping for, that there would be some good.
Or man, God, could we get Shirley MacLaine, Dame Judi, and Maggie?
Oh good heavens. You're really front loading the whole thing, aren't you?
That would be nice.
It would be.
Yeah, get them out on the town.
Talk about sassy trollops.
Girls Gone Wild. Yeah. UK.
Dame's Gone Wild. Yeah.
What was that club called again?
Yeah.
The Blue Dragon.
There you go.
Exactly. Yeah. The Dowager and her dames hit the Blue Dragon. And finally, we have a picture that we wanted to show that was set on Twitter. I actually tweeted this as well. This is Daisy, Lord Grantham, Anna, Bates, and Thomas all doing a U.S. tour in December and took the subway in New York City. And took a picture downtown.
I barely recognized any of them.
Yeah, I know. No. It's amazing, isn't it?
Weird. So weird. That's great.
So if you want, you can see that on my Twitter feed, or you can find it on Twitter because one of the cast, I think probably several of the cast members tweeted that picture. And that is what I have for news and gossip right
now. That's our news for Down, but we have a little bit of news for AfterBuzz.
Yes, we do.
We here at AfterBuzz are very excited to announce the theatrical release of Adventures of Serial Buddies. It's a hilarious new comedy. And it was produced by AfterBuzz TV CEOs, myself included.
Founders
and CEOs, Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek was part of it as well. It's a movie that stars two broke girls, Beth Bears. It's got Artie Lang in it. Kathy Lee Gifford, Christopher Lloyd, Chris McDonald, Maria Menounos as well, and Henry Winkler. So a whole slew of people in it. Being on set, it was a pleasure to work with those people. Those guys are great. All of them were wonderful on set and are great in the movie. So, you can see the trailer at Adventures of Serial Buddies, or just go to SerialBuddies.com.
SerialBuddies.com has
it. AfterBuzz TV has it. It's all over the place. We'll be opening in March 8th in selected cities around the country, New York, Boston, San Francisco. Where else are we?
LA.
Los Angeles.
Chicago.
Yes, of course. It's a very low-budget film. If we get a good turnout there, hopefully we'll go to the bigger cities and go nationwide. But other than that, go see it. At least see the trailer. It's a lot of fun.
It is. It's
very
fun.
A great
fun.
Time.
It's fun.
So thank you for all that. And that's all our news and gossip. That moves us to predictions.
Predictions.
Now, AfterBuzz TV predictions.
So in just a few days, it's the finale. And I want to point out that... the way the show was aired in the UK, the episode that we saw today was the show finale that aired, I think it was November 4th in the UK. And then they had to wait 7 weeks to see what we are going to see the next episode, so it's called the Christmas special.
Yeah. That's and how
it,
they do it.
It aired on Christmas Day in the UK a couple months ago. So they had to wait 7 weeks from where we are right now to what we're going to see on Sunday.
We only have to wait a week.
And
we have some extra time in the studio next week, so we'll be doing both hours, the two-hour finale in one podcast.
Yeah, because that one would be impossible to try and break up into two podcasts. Okay, so predictions.
Yeah.
Well, Alina, I think you should go first.
My prediction is poor Edith is going to fall in love with the scandalous editor who's still married. And
is this just for next episode, or are you going into next season?
Next episode.
Okay. She moves fast.
So are we talking an affair, or do you think there's going to be a romance where they're going to have a relationship?
Well, I think she's going to hold back just because of the situation.
Sure.
But
she's goner.
She's
in love, and that's
it. She's a goner, and you know what? She's always wanted it.
Yeah.
So.
Wanted.
Poor Edith.
Even though she doesn't seem as desperate anymore.
Right.
You know, deep down, she wants love like her
sure,
sisters.
Sure, she does.
There's one thing I know, and based on that, so this is a spoiler, it's a small spoiler. I do know that the Christmas episode that we are going to see next week happens 1 year from the show that we're recapping today.
What?
Okay.
I'm even more excited.
So, knowing that, we know things can change dramatically,
it's a year later.
And in that.
Oh, it's because they had 7 weeks. I get it. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So, a year has passed.
Right.
Between episodes.
Right.
So I am going to predict that Mary will have a baby because it's a year away. I'm going to say she will have a baby by then.
Good prediction. I like that.
All right. Wow.
Mary and Matthew will have a child. Now, whether it's an heir or a wretched girl.
A year later.
Yeah, a year later. Sorry, I probably should have said that before we got the predictions out. But although yours can fit in perfectly.
Yeah, I think yours fits in. Alina's fits in great.
Yeah, they're going to be together.
Yeah. Well, that
John, what do
everything.
You have for a prediction?
Well, you know, I was going to say something about Thomas being, but if I don't know if he's still going to be there. He's still going to be there because we would have heard if he isn't. So he's still there, but I don't know in what capacity. I'm stymied.
You're stumped?
I'm just stymied now.
All right. Well, we're just looking forward to it.
Yeah,
then.
I got nothing.
I, you know, in my news, I do have some news for, some great news to tell you for,
oh, for next week.
Yeah.
Okay,
so
great.
I can't spill it now because it could spoil things for next week. But very excited for the finale and very excited to tell you all the things that we found out
about
season 4.
That's
going to come up soon.
All right. Well, we're getting a rollout music. So, Alina, please let everybody know where they can find you.
On Twitter, @_Alina23, and Alina spelled A-L-I-N-A. I also host Project Runway Thursday nights on AfterBuzz.
There you go. Tamara.
You can find me on Twitter @TamaraBerg, TamaraBerg. I also have a fantastic website, TamaraCentral.com. And I'm going to be doing Justified a little bit later today and Smash
some
next
jewelry?
Week.
Some I do have some jewelry.
I do have some jewelry. I'm putting up some new pieces in the next couple of days. Uh-huh. You can check out my website because I am an Anglophile.
Yeah.
A lot of my jewelry has antique English elements to it. So
Of the Edwardian age.
Of the time that we're talking about. So I'll talk about that a little bit more next week, but I'm getting some new pieces up this week. TamaraCentral.com.
Okay. And Stephen, any last words from you there, my friend?
Not really. You can find me at Stephen Lemieux.
All right. There you go, Stephen Lemieux. All right. Well, on behalf of everybody. Oh, you know what I want to tell you? Go see Serial Buddies, obviously. Check out the trailer at Adventures of Serial Buddies or SerialBuddies.com at the AfterBuzz TV website as well. Take a look at that. And on behalf of everybody here, we want to thank you very much for tuning in to part 2 to see episode 6. And we will see you next time.
From Bing.com, executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later. Cup of tea?
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.